Please be advised. This episode may include depictions of murder, sexual content, and foul language not suitable for children. Parental discretion is advised. Hi, welcome back to Wickedness. I'm Lenny.
And I'm Matt.
And this week has been as boring as every other week.
No.
Yes. We still are babysitting our granddaughters, and we still got just normalcy going on, which I'm not complaining about. It's just, I don't know. There's not much going on this week to talk about.
Boring when you got two little grandbabies and a grandson that are doing their things.
Yeah.
Wild and crazy.
They are wild and crazy, and they're cute.
And we're building we're building a Porsche. 911.
Did we tell you guys we built Did we tell them we built a Jeep?
Yeah.
Out of Legos?
Yeah.
And now we're doing a Porsche out of Legos.
Yeah. I was going to leave the Lego part out and just let them be like, think we're just really awesome.
Like, we're so cool. We're building a Porsche our garage. Yeah, no
big deal.
No, we're not that cool.
Yeah.
It's a Lego set.
Yes.
And we are not that big of nerds, okay? Like, honestly, I haven't played with Lego since I was a kid until we were roaming around and we got this Jeep and we were like, let's just do it. And then it turned out to be really fun and really cool. And so we decided to do it again with a Porsche.
Yeah. Well, and two, speaking of Lego, one of our church friends, he works over there at Lego. But he's only got like a month left, and he said, hey, man, I get like 50% off, so.
What?
Yeah.
When did you have this conversation?
Today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so we were doing, both of us had production type work that we did
at
our church, and then I was like, oh, we're doing part two production right now.
Yeah, I really wish we had recorded and stuff already, but here we are. It is what it is.
Yeah.
So. You guys won't even hear all this until Tuesday, and so Sunday will be behind you, and you'll be like, what do you mean you went to church on Tuesday? But whatever, yeah. So this week, we are continuing on with our story about the Happy Face Killer. Last week, we introduced you to Keith Hunter Jesperson, talked about his childhood, his abusive family, how he fit all the stereotypical checklist items for red flags that you might find in a psychopath, you know, and someone who, you know, is a serial killer.
You know what, though, too, is I feel like he could have been saved, kind of.
Do you think so? At a very young age. Remember, he was like 4 or 5 when he started doing stuff.
I know, but he got married, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then that didn't work out, though.
Right.
But it seemed like he could have been kind of saved. And I've seen some of these serial killers that we talk about. So I feel like some of these serial killers that we've talked about, like they were just on the cusp, maybe, or could have been kind of saved. I mean, probably not. But it seemed like they were going down the right path, like they found a better way, and then something happened and they totally just like, nope, that was it. Last straw.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. So
all I know is he was abused, sexually molested, tortured. He killed, he tortured and killed animals from a very young age. He had a head injury. He attacked 2 kids before he was even a teenager. This guy was a total package for what not to be like, and checked off all the boxes of being a serial killer. So I don't know if he could have been saved.
No, and I remember all that last week when we were talking about it. But then it seemed like, that marriage and stuff, it was like, maybe he's trying. And then, nope, it didn't work out.
Well, I think his first marriage, his second marriage, when he got divorced, and they had 2 kids, remember?
Yeah.
When he got divorced from her, I feel like that kind of freed the monster a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think he would have killed either way.
Yeah.
He would have done what he did.
Okay.
But in my opinion.
Sure.
But I think he would have done what he did regardless. And I don't think that anything would have stopped him. And he was just, the divorce ended up freeing him up in a way that he was able to hide it easier because he was on his own.
Yeah.
And that's just my personal opinion.
Right.
But last week, we ended after talking about his second kill that he did a year and a half after his first kill. Do you remember he had the Tanya person and then a year and a half later had a second victim. And now we're going to pick up with the third victim.
Okay.
Okay. So a month after his second victim, the body of 32-year-old Cynthia Lynn Rose was found in Turlock, California. And Keith would later tell investigators that she was a prostitute who got in his truck at a truck stop while he was sleeping. And I always thought this was kind of funny. I found it weird. Like, did he say it was a self-defense thing or something? Like, she got in his truck while he was sleeping. Is that real?
Right.
Or was she a prostitute that you invited into your truck and you killed her? Mm-hmm. Which I think is more likely. I'm not sure what he was trying to accomplish with that story about I was sleeping and she crawled into my truck and I killed her. It just doesn't, you're a serial killer who is targeting these women and that you drive a truck.
Or is a perfect opportunity for him.
Maybe. If his story really is, if that's how it happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, that poor girl. But she was found on Highway 99 and had been dead for a long time. And she was found around the same time that Keith had started writing the letters that he wrote to the Oregonian newspaper where he claimed responsibility for her murder in those letters. You know, when he was signing his
little happy face.
Happy face, yeah.
To give him the moniker.
Mm-hmm. Yep, mm-hmm. He's the happy face killer. So his fourth victim was another prostitute named Lorianne Pentland, a 26-year-old woman from Salem, Oregon. He's developing a pattern of attacking prostitutes here. And you know,
a little bit of an easy prey.
Very, very. And I think that's what serial killers do, right? They target the people who they think will not be missed or easily missed or quickly missed.
Well, the thing is like for him, it's easy because he's out on the road and then it's prostitutes. I mean, the two make it even easier.
Right. Because we know truck stops are frequented by prostitutes. It's a big place.
A lot of lizard action.
Blood lizards, that's right.
Yeah, I haven't heard that in a while, have you? No. I haven't either. I just threw that out there.
Didn't that come from our daughter's boyfriend? He's a truck driver, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's what they were called or something.
Well, yeah,
like
but
that?
I knew. I've heard of that.
Oh, I had never heard of it.
But yeah, that's what they are called.
Well,
there's another. There's another term, and I cannot remember it, but there's another one too. But
if you are a prostitute out there frequenting truck stops, I apologize for calling you a lot lizard, but it is what it is. Stop doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get killed in someone's truck. Anyway, so this guy, Keith, he's developing a pattern of attacking prostitutes, and her body was found in November of 1992 behind a G.I. Joe store in Salem, Oregon.
Now, what are we talking about, G.I. Joe store? Like an actual action figure G.I. Joe store or like a Army and Navy surplus store.
I honestly don't know. It just said
that. Because if it was a G.I. Joe store, I want to go because that'd be kind of cool.
Well, we lived really close to Salem.
Anyway, so I'm just saying.
At one point, you never even mentioned wanting to go check out a G.I. Joe store.
Well, I didn't know there was one that existed, but now that I do, I want to go. Not that I like collect them or anything, but they were a
childhood memory. Neat little thing.
It would be kind of cool.
Okay, so off track again.
Speaking of folks, if you're ever traveling to Oklahoma, like going down towards Dallas from Oklahoma City, there is a
action
figure museum.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, side note. Back to Keith.
Yeah,
and his killings.
Let's get back to the podcast and stop talking about stuff like that maybe for a minute. I don't know. It's kind of fun to interject this crap.
Yeah.
But Keith told, and we are not getting paid for this advertisement. So, Action Figure Museum, if people start showing up, you owe us.
Yeah,
you owe
us. Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say.
Just throw me an action figure swag.
Something. Come on. T-shirt.
Right.
Sweatshirt. I don't know. Anyway, Keith told investigators that she had tried to double charge him for the sex they had. And she even threatened to call the cops on him if he didn't pay. And so he strangled her and dumped her body behind the G.I. Joe store.
Okay.
And as police started to piece things together, they noted that the preferred method for the Happy Face Killer to kill his victims was through strangulation. They were all, they were all pretty much, I don't know if you want to say rape or used or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with raped and strangled.
Right.
About 8 months later, on or in July of 1993, a Jane Doe was found in Santa Nella, California. And the police originally thought that this woman's death was a drug overdose, which I find very sad. Just means you really didn't look into it. And the highway patrol listed her as a, quote, street person, end quote. So I'm assuming that she was presumed to be homeless. Mm-hmm. So this also tells me that they probably didn't look into it at all. They probably said, nope, she's a homeless lady doing drugs. Dead. Let's just write this off, sign off on it, and get rid of this.
Yeah, I mean, not a case. And not that it's horrible to say, but it's not that it wasn't important because all of it is important. But I'm wondering.
No, I feel like they treated it like she wasn't important.
It takes a back burner when they might have. I wonder how many other cases, the caseload, the stuff that's in front of them, the people that the cold, even if it's a cold case stuff that are like people, like let's say it was one of our children or somebody that we knew that was killed, and we're in their face a lot more. And this person, they're homeless, vagrant. They're vagrant, and they just don't really put as much effort into it. I could, you know, you would see that.
I can see your point, but it doesn't make it right.
It doesn't make it right, and it makes me mad
that this even happened. But her body, and it happens. I know it happens. Mm-hmm. They just write it off and sign off on it as fast as they can, but it shouldn't because of cases like this. So her body was found along a state highway near a truck turnout. I couldn't find her name, so I think she's still listed as a Jane Doe. But her case was reopened when another letter from the Happy Face Killer was received and mentioned her and where her body was dumped. Mm-hmm. And so they started looking at it as a homicide.
Yeah.
Now they look at it as a homicide.
Okay.
And I think, I personally think if you had actually looked at the and I don't know because I haven't seen autopsy photos or anything like this. I haven't seen pictures of this woman's body or any of that. But if his method is rape and strangulation, why are you going to just automatically go drug overdose, homeless woman, sign off on it and get her out of here? Yeah. Not a case we're going to investigate. Wouldn't you have known she was strangled? Like, wouldn't you have noticed that? Right. I don't know what she was wearing or anything like that, but there had to be signs that. Yeah. It was a murder.
Well, in today's technology, I mean, you could imagine how you could extrapolate things with computer systems and AI and all that. When you just put in keywords and things, and it'll automatically go to a potential suspects, let's say,
right,
that kill in this manner.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, today you would think, like, let's get all the facts. Let's put all this stuff in a system. And then hopefully it spits out some information that can help you lead to finding who did it.
That's all great and stuff that is probably in place today, but we're talking about this case right here. And it's like they didn't even look. You have a body laying in front of you.
Yeah, I know.
And you didn't even look to see, was she injured?
Yeah.
No, you're just automatically wrote it off as a drug overdose. And like this to me is not okay.
Yeah.
Anyway, it kind of makes me mad. So over a year later, in September of 1994, another Jane Doe is found along Interstate 10 near Crestview, Florida. And Keith told authorities her name was Suzanne. So he admitted to this one and said this is her name. And the remains were mostly bones that were found, but investigators were able to estimate that her age was about 40 years old at the time of her death. But there really wasn't much else about her that was released because she was found. Like, we don't know when he killed her or any of that stuff. I don't even think he remembered when.
Yeah.
So then in January of 1995, Keith agreed to take a woman named Angela Cerberes from Spokane, Washington to Indiana in his truck so she could be with her boyfriend. This one is kind of, okay. So about a week into the trip, Angela got really impatient with how long it was taking to get there. And she started nagging Keith about it. Mm-hmm. Like, why aren't we there yet? Yeah. You know, how long does this actually take?
Yeah.
So he gets mad and like, he's a serial killer. I know she doesn't know that, but she's about to find out. So he gets mad. He rapes her and strangles her. And then he strapped her body to the undercarriage of his truck and dragged her face down, quote, to grind off her face and prints.
Wow.
End quote.
That's...
Yeah, he was that pissed off about her nagging.
Jeez Louise.
That he raped her, strangled her, and then tied her body to the bottom of his truck and drug her. And her body was found several months later, but only because Keith told them where to go look for her. Like, when he got across the state line where he was, he untied her and just pushed her off into a drainage ditch or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that she was from Oklahoma City, which I found interesting, originally from Oklahoma City, and she was last seen alive in Wyoming. Keith said he killed her in Wyoming and then drug her into Nebraska, where he dumped her.
All right. He's a intrastate killer.
Well, he's definitely
an interstate killer.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, he's a serial killer. He's all over the place. He's in Florida, he's in California, he's in Oregon, he's everywhere.
Crossing the state lines with the body there, mm-hmm. strapped to the back, bottom of his truck. That's crazy.
Yes, to make her unrecognizable. That was his whole goal to dragging her. He was that pissed off at her nagging.
Louise.
So ladies, if you don't know a man, like even if you do know a man, like I don't know if I know Matt is never going to hurt me because 18 years of being with this guy, I would probably be more likely to punch him than he would ever like touch me. But if you are not that secure, like 100% secure, don't talk crap to your man. Just shut your mouth and walk away. Cause he might get so mad that he'll tie you to the back of or the bottom of his truck and drag you across state lines and then dump your body somewhere. You don't know. So stop nagging.
Yeah. Stop nagging.
Yeah. My little public service announcement for everyone.
That's good.
So anyway, 2 months after he killed Angela, Keith decided that his longtime girlfriend, Julie Ann Winningham, was only with him for money. So this whole time he's out killing these women after his divorce, he is dating this woman, Julie Ann.
Mm-hmm.
And he decides suddenly that she's just in it for the money. So on March 10th, 1995, in Washougal, Washington, Keith strangled her to death.
Go figure. Right.
So this victim was the only victim who was actually linked to Keith. So this is the kill that finally got him caught.
Oh.
So serial killers out there, if you're listening, don't kill people you know. Duh.
Right?
That's like serial killer 101. Don't kill people you know.
Yeah.
Just don't. Anyway. So, or do. So you can get caught. So, like his other victims, she'd been strangled and her body had been dumped nude over an embankment along Highway 14, just east of the Clark and Skamania County line. Julie's friends and family knew she had been seeing Keith, so they were able to give that information to police when her body was found. They had suspected him right away, which that's normal. I say it in almost every podcast that has anything to do with a family member or a girlfriend, boyfriend type thing. The first person they go to is the closest relative.
Yeah.
Whether it be a brother, sister, mom, dad, whatever, they look in the family first.
Sure.
And boyfriend, girlfriend relationships, they consider familial, kind of like a spousal thing. And so they went to...
It's a crime of passion.
Whatever.
Or
he's like
this lady just trying to take all my money.
She's trying to take my money.
She's done.
Yeah. So this is also why, ladies, you should be financially independent from your mans. Then they can't accuse you of trying to take their money.
True.
You do that during the divorce,
true,
though. Okay? You don't give any slack on that during the divorce.
Yeah, you don't need no scrubs.
Anyway. So after this, a detective named Rick Buckner, who was well known for his work on the Wesley Allen Dodd child murders case from a few years prior to this, had been assigned the Julie Ann Winningham case. He found out that Julie had moved back to Washington from Utah with Keith, as she was referring to him as her fiance. So apparently she thought they were engaged. He heard from people that he had investigated that Keith was a big guy and that some described him as a giant and baby Huey type person, which I was like, wow, what's a baby Huey?
Yeah.
But he also found that Keith had no criminal record in Washington and that he had been married and divorced and had a few kids. So his background is actually coming up normal and clean on Keith.
Mm-hmm.
He also found out that Keith worked for Cheney Trucking, and that he traveled all over the country. But most importantly, he learned that in the days immediately following Julie's death, he was on the road to Pennsylvania. So he left right after Julie was killed. And the company provided Rick with Keith's travel itinerary back toward the West Coast, which was a route that would take him through Texas, New Mexico, and Arizona. And this was, I guess, a typical route for him.
Mm-hmm.
So using this route, Rick was able to trace Keith to Las Cruces, New Mexico, near the Mexican border. He contacted the Las Cruces Sheriff's Office and got them to help him. And he went to New Mexico, and with their help, they detained Keith and questioned him about Julie for more than 6 hours. And that was on March 22nd, 1995. So Keith was arrested on March 30th, 1995, a few weeks after he murdered Julie. He had been questioned the week before, but police couldn't hold him because he had refused to talk to them, basically, and they didn't have anything on him. Nothing concrete, just a suspicion. And after this questioning, though, Keith got really paranoid that police were onto him, and he tried to commit suicide twice before finally deciding to turn himself in, hoping for leniency since he was turning himself in. So this is how he actually got caught. Like,
okay,
they would have caught him anyway, yeah, once they had gathered up some evidence, I'm pretty sure, but he got paranoid and freaked out and tried to take some pills that didn't work out. And then he's like, okay, I'm just going to turn myself in. So while he's in custody, he started to tell on himself, not just about Julie. He was giving details about his killings in general. Like he really lost it in there because he went off the deep end. And wow, he's like, yeah, so I've been killing for a while.
Yeah,
like, yeah, like, you should know. I don't know why you would tell on yourself when they're investigating you for
one murder.
Why are you going to confess to all these others? But he did. And then he later tried to recant those stories. He seemed to wisen up, you know, and calm down a little bit and be like, oh, crap. Like,
yeah, what am I doing here?
Right. But a few days before he had turned himself in for Julie's murder, he had written a letter to his brother telling him that he had killed 8 people over the course of 5 years. So he confessed to his brother. And then part of the letter said, quote, "Seems like my luck has run out. I will never be able to enjoy life on the outside again. I got into a bad situation and got caught up with emotion. I killed a woman in my truck during an argument. With all the evidence against me, it looks like I truly am a black sheep. The courts will appoint me a lawyer and there will be a trial. I am sure they will kill me for this. I am sorry that I turned out this way. I have been a killer for 5 years and have killed 8 people, assaulted more. I guess I haven't learned anything. Dad always has worried about me because of what I have gone through in the divorce, finances, etc. I have been taking it out on different people. As I saw it, I was hoping they would catch me. I took 48 sleeping pills last night and I woke up well rested.
Jeez.
The night before, I took 2 bottles of pills to no avail. They will arrest me today." End quote. This was in the letter to his brother. So when Keith returned to Washington in police custody, he contacted his brother and told him to destroy that letter he had sent him because, you know, he's trying to say, no, I didn't actually do this stuff.
Right.
But on the advice of his lawyer and his dad, his brother gave the letter to police, which, good on you.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you got a lawyer involved, too, mm-hmm, you know, to protect yourself, too.
Oh, sure.
Shortly after it was given to police, it was printed in a number of newspapers across the country. So he really did screw himself over.
Yeah.
All of this led police agencies in several states across the country to reopen old cases, and they found many cases that could be victims of Keith's. There were also cases Keith tried to claim that were not his. For now that this lid is blown off, now he's like, oh, yeah, I did that one too. Yeah, I did this one.
Right.
So, for example, this one was the main one that I was just like, seriously?
Yeah.
He tried to say he killed a woman from Bend, Oregon named Bobby Krasinski.
Mm-hmm.
She had been killed in 1992, and her husband, Jack, had been convicted of the crime. It was found out that the details of the murder Keith was providing was coming directly from Jack in prison, and they were working together to try to get Jack freed, and Jack had agreed to pay $10,000 to Keith's kids if it happened.
Oh, wow.
Like, he was making deals to get this guy who actually did murder his wife freed from prison because he knows he's going in for life. He's killed X amount of people, but for some reason you want to free another killer. This is so stupid. But just crazy stuff happening in this one, to include being a Green River Killer suspect. He was also a suspect in the Green River Killer case. Mm-hmm. It also made it so that even though Keith recanted, police knew he was initially telling the truth because the letter and all this other crap he's trying to pull. Keith, we know from last week's episode and this stuff, was not all there. Like, dude had some issues. But in the end, Keith tried to claim that he had killed 160 people, but only 8 women in California, Florida, Nebraska, Oregon, Washington, and Wyoming have been confirmed. He's now trying to claim 160
people. 160?
Lord. Most likely that's not true.
Right.
I hope it's not true because that's crazy. Sure. In October of 1995, just before his trial was supposed to begin, he pled guilty to Julie's murder in Clark County, Washington. He was then transferred to Oregon, and on November 2nd, 1995, he entered a no-contest plea for Tanya's murder. He received a life sentence. In December 1995, Washington gave him another life sentence. And then back in Oregon, a DNA test and other forensic evidence linked him to the Lori Pentland murder, and he was finally identified as the Happy Face Killer at this point. Keith had written letters as a Happy Face Killer after Lori was murdered, where he claimed responsibility for her death and told how he met her over CB radio and said that he had had sex with her several times and stuff. So he wrote as a Happy Face Killer, quote, "I felt so much power. I then told her she was going to die and slowly strangled her," end quote. He's serving 2 consecutive life sentences in Oregon State Penitentiary in Salem with a 30-year minimum. If he lives long enough to meet those requirements, he will then be transferred to Washington State to serve that life sentence. And on January 3rd, 1998, after a lot of back and forth in Wyoming and Nebraska, Keith was convicted and received a life sentence to run consecutive to the 2 life sentences in Oregon. So this lets us know he's going to die in prison. Oh, he's never getting out.
He's not getting out.
He was indicted for the murder in Riverside, California, County California, too, recently, or in September of 2009, and extradited there to face those charges in December of 2009, where he pled guilty to the murders committed there in 2010 and received another life sentence.
Jeez.
So he's got life sentences in several states. And
you get a life sentence. You get a life sentence.
We're handing them out like candy to keep Jefferson.
Well, good,
so.
Good.
Yeah, so this guy is not getting out. He's not gonna see freedom for a very long time, and luckily no other women are getting killed by him.
Right. That is for show.
And that's it for our Happy Face Killer.
Tales of a Serial Killer. All right. Well, let us know what you think. You can contact us at wickednesstruecrime@yahoo.com. Check us out at our website at wickednesstruecrimeandtheunknown.com. And find us on Instagram at wickednesstruecrime.
And we also have a Facebook. I just created a Facebook.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you guys can go follow that
and
too.
Is it wickednesstruecrime?
Yep.
So go check us out on that.
Yeah.
And get some live updates there. Check us out on Anchor at anchor.fm/wickedness, where you can also support us if you feel like lending your support by clicking on that support button. And last but not least, please rate, review, and subscribe to our podcast. This helps us get our podcast out to other people and make sure you don't miss an episode. Until next week, my friends, have a good one.
Bye.